Today I want to talk about expectations. What are their expectations of you, and what are your expectations of your own? See if this is true for you. If you had clearly understood other people's expectations for you, you could have come much closer to fulfilling them. Is that true? If your expectations included how you would feel after the fact, after you took action, you would have been able to make better decisions prior to taking action. Is that true? Perhaps you've heard this said to you, or you said it to other people. What did you expect? And usually that question is asked when a behavior obviously produced a negative effect, and in retrospect, it was so obvious that it was unbelievable that somebody could have expected something else to occur from that. I think that one of the kindest chunks of information that could be delivered by a parent, by a teacher, by a boss, by a partner, by a pal, would be, "This is what I expect." Whether we choose to fulfill those expectations or not, that would obviously be up to us. But at least we would know what the other people had in mind, what they were looking for, what their game plan was. To fail to meet somebody else's expectations because they didn't express them, that just leads to bad feelings about ourselves and other people. Sometimes in relationships, I certainly have heard this, perhaps you have, "Well, if you really loved me, you would have known what I expected. You would have known what should have been the gift. You should have known what to do." But because we didn't, we then feel less effective. And if that persists, then we hesitate to even take action after a while, just because we know we're going to fail so much. And we think that, wait a minute, to deliberately, though, fail to seek to understand what the expectations were and just blindly do things, it's kind of like driving a car with our eyes closed. That's not going to lead to success. We're not going to be happy with those results. A mentor of mine once explained the difference between immature thinking and mature thinking. And I think these descriptions are relevant anytime we're talking about expectations. He said that both immature thinking and mature thinking had the same three steps, the same three components, but the sequence was different. Immature thinking had as the first step emotions, followed by actions based upon those emotions, followed by decisions that we would interpret what we did after the fact. Mature thinking, though, the sequence is different. The first step would be making a decision. The second step is taking action based on that decision. And then the third step is to use the emotions that are produced to reinforce the decision and to adjust the actions if necessary. If we make a decision effectively, we will consider the expected outcome. In fact, it's that expectation that draws to us, that attracts to us, the energy that we need to fuel the action. It's going to advance us in the direction toward our expectation. If emotions drive our actions, we're not going to be really clear necessarily about our expectations. It's pretty much the idea that emotions disconnected from our decision is kind of like starting the car and putting it in motion, but there not being a driver there. It's moving, but we're not sure exactly where it's going and what effects it's going to cause. Early in life, we receive inputs. How about conception? How about 9 months in utero? How about during the birth process? And then from that point, every single day, many, many times a day, we're receiving inputs. And if you go back up in time from conception, you go, we receive vibrational inputs. Sure, this is how we grow from a fertilized ovum into a fetus, into a baby, into a, infant into a child, into a teenager, into an adult by this constant delivery and receipt of inputs. There's a tendency, particularly with marketing nowadays, to, and maybe this has been true for a long period of time, to think that the determining factors in this growth that I just described from conception right on up to adulthood is almost completely determined by the nutrients in the food and beverages that we consume. However, Christ in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth says that, wait a minute, only a small portion of life force, of the energy that you need in order to grow and be healthy and live happy lives, only a small portion comes from the food that we eat. It's like, we absorb consciousness forms from other people, from the environment, from television, from advertising, what we read, from what we think about, so on. As adults, we can control that to a larger extent than we could as children. And as a child, when we heard somebody describe or label us, we accept that label because we couldn't filter it. We accepted it as truth, as an expectation. We then tend to live up to or down to that label. That label is an expectation of a condition that persists. You know this, and I know this, that if a child was called stupid, he or she would not have said this: "Oh, at this one moment in time, I was stupid, but that's the end of it. That's the end of me being stupid. It's over. And I'm glad. Period." And they get on with life. That is not what happened. That consciousness form of stupid lives on, particularly if it penetrates the child's consciousness. And because their lack of filtering, a lot of the stuff expressed around a child, whether it's directed at them or not, will penetrate their subconscious mind. Bruce Lipton says, till we're about 6 years old, we don't have any way to defend ourselves from these incoming environmental signals. And in fact, they all start to program us on the subconscious level. So let's say when we were growing up, we had that sort of input. Somebody said some unkind thing to us. They labeled us, they described us unkindly, and perhaps even convinced us to do it to ourselves. The end result of that is these thoughts, those feelings, those words, those labels, and those actions are going to be producing some sort of an internal battle between us. Think of it like this: that internal battle of expectations as we try to fight this, and I'll call it an infection. It's a like not good enough virus, the NGE virus, that the label we just got convinced us that we are in fact not good enough on one level or another. And now all of a sudden that's in our consciousness, it's in our system, and that battle now starts to go on. It's like fighting an infection. Except what we're talking about here is a battle between the heart and the mind, the truth and the lie. At the spiritual level, at the core of us, we are love. It's this essence of harmony, this essence of connectedness. And I think that's a requirement in order for us to grow, because as we add cells and cells and cells and keep reproducing, as long as those cells are in harmony and another cell is reproduced, it's healthy, and another and another and another and another, and those things stay together, they stay connected, and they form tissues, they form muscles, nerves, and so on. And then you turn around and go, oh, that's how our bodies grow. I think so. And so the tissues and these organs do that because of this ability to bond, this ability to experience love. If the lies of false labels and expectations that have been bombarding us begin to win this internal battle, it's like the infection that infectious belief, those consciousness forms, are starting to overwhelm our system and our attitude, the way we think, feel, speak, and act. It's like, oh boy, we got a problem. Because the cells in our bodies, their ability and their willingness to work cooperatively starts to decrease or, in some cases, ceases altogether. Just think, a cell that is reproduced that has no consciousness of love, harmony, cooperation, and its place in the whole, its neighborhood, its relationship, now all of a sudden is not going to be able to build healthy tissues or organs. Now all of a sudden you go, wow, I think I'm describing cancer. A cancer cell doesn't understand love, and it doesn't understand the concept of well-being of the body. It is just mindlessly on a very low awareness level because of oxygen deprivation, etc., and other low vibrations. It is just reproducing willy-nilly, helter-skelter. The other day in a conversation, I heard the words should and shouldn't a whole bunch of times. Shoulds and shouldn'ts are both demands and expectations. We should be good. We shouldn't be bad. We should be happy. We shouldn't be sad. We should be loving. We shouldn't be angry. Expectations are given to us when we're infants and even before birth, as I was saying earlier, because we're going to pick up the shoulds and shouldn'ts that our mothers felt. What they heard, what they said, what they felt are going to be delivered to us as, like, okay, these are expectations, these are rules, this is how to be in life, this is what to do in life, and this is what you can have and not have in life. So as all of these expectations are heaped on us, we do it to our own children, just like it was done to us. We expect our children to be happy, healthy, good students, good people, respectful, kind, helpful around the house, strong, thoughtful, gentle, and all the other ideals that, when you add them up, equals perfect. We expect our children to be perfect. The trouble with that expectation is that it leads to failure. Failure and frustration for both the children and the parents. It's a flawed expectation. Holding ourselves to standards that can't possibly be met prevents our happiness. When we compare ourselves to others and produce feelings of, say, inferiority or superiority, we've taken in, after the fact, expectations that make us feel bad about ourselves or better about ourselves compared to those other people that we judge to be less than us. We expected, usually in some of our engagements, to be equal or better than other people. I mean, this is, we get trained in being competitive from very early ages. In the old days, this was usually a man's kind of training, but nowadays, everybody gets trained to be really competitive, not cooperative, but really competitive. So if we thought, we're going to be equal to or better than these other people, but somehow, when we saw somebody that we perceived to be superior, they were faster, they were stronger, they were got a higher grade or whatever, and we considered them to be superior, we deflated. When we saw somebody we perceived as not as good as us, you know, we were faster, stronger, and we got better grades, then we inflated. To expect ourselves to be like other people is a path to pain. When you think of it, we really need to be encouraged to be like ourselves. And if we're adults now, we have to provide that encouragement to ourselves now. We're not trying to be somebody else. We're trying to be us. And acceptance of that fact and expectation of that fact gives us a whole different direction of our energy. We can expect ourselves to grow physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And we can actually set that as a goal. We expect it because it's natural and it's also designed It's part of life to have that experience. Because so many expectations, rules, and regulations, depending on the environment that you grew up in, you know, in your family of origin, your ethnicity, your culture, your church environment, we have a tremendous number of expectations heaped upon us. So it's really difficult to know what expectations are reasonable and valid. I like the ideas from Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, that Jesus became aware of his of that as his consciousness expanded in the desert after his baptism by John. Christ realized that divine consciousness was always seeking to provide for all of its creations the following: growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect. That is, we reap what we sow. If the divine is providing those nine items, you think we can expect to receive those nine items? Do you think we can expect to experience those nine items in our lives? I do. And as Christ says, that divine consciousness works for us, in us, and through us to deliver love. I think we can expect to receive love, to have it, this love and this harmony, to start to work in our bodies, in the cells of our bodies, in our tissues, in our organs, in the way our body functions, and in our own personal and business affairs, whatever activities we've got going on in our lives, business-wise, family-wise, socially, we can have the divine working to harmonize us in all of those contexts. And then to have love work through us for the benefit of others. As we start to express this energy that we have taken in and we've uniquely translated, and then we offer it and express it, that's how we participate in the economic system. That's how we can deliver value. That's how we can gain greater sense of our own effectiveness. And we can expect that. If we can expect ourselves to grow physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, that would mean we can't expect to have reached perfection, since if we reached perfection, we wouldn't be growing anymore. We would have arrived at this unbelievable destination. But because we're growing, we haven't arrived at perfection. We're still in the process of becoming. We're a work in progress. And if we accept that and expect that, then we know we're going to be learning and as we go along. To sustain our growth, I think we can expect nutrition and nourishment, nurturing and caring. The life force that our growth needs comes from divine consciousness, and some comes from the food we eat and the beverages we drink, but most of it comes from the divine, not the food and drink. We can expect this, and by expecting it, we are actually opening up to receive it. And that opening up is largely our responsibility. The idea of reaching out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and asking for enlightenment, the solution to a problem, answer to a question, a viewpoint so we can address a challenge, as we open to that and expect to receive it, we'll listen better. As you might expect, pun intended, our expectations are a combination of things, including our desires and our beliefs, the beliefs that we form from our previous experiences. If we have practiced feeling guilty when we do or don't do things, I think we can expect to feel guilty the next time we try to do or not do things, because that's the energy that we've associated with it. And I actually think this is a major issue with regard to procrastination. We can consider an activity, something that needs to be done, but our expectations of it being difficult, or us not doing it well, or if we start getting engaged in this process, instead of making it better, we're going to actually make it worse. It's like, yikes, right. And we'll get bad feelings about ourselves, and perhaps other people will get bad feelings about ourselves. Maybe even back to that one of those original questions, what did you expect? You know? And it's like, ooh, wow, gee, I didn't understand. And if we've got those energetic feelings, if we've got those beliefs, if we've got that going on based upon previous experiences, we can create a barrier around us, a force field around us, that it's almost impossible to break through it. It's like, I can't get myself to do this particular activity. Why? And we may label ourselves, I'm a procrastinator. Now, actually, what we are is we are a barrier creator. And now, based upon the barrier we've created, our expectations of pain and failure are so intense, it's hard to move forward. There's a cliche, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. That's the opposite concept of procrastination. In this case, right, the expectations of happiness and love and success or whatever, are so high that other factors, maybe that needed to be considered, are overlooked entirely. And that person goes rushing in, and it's like, whoops, you didn't take everything into account that was obviously there, ready to be considered. But somewhere between being a procrastinator and being a, open quotes, close quotes, fool, is the place we would like to come from with our own expectations. If we're going to formulate expectations, it's like, yeah, I want to be in between somewhere. I don't want to be so protected that I don't take action, nor do I want to be blind and just rush off the edge of the hill like a lemming might do. So, what are other people's expectations of you? Mostly, they expect you to act in their self-interest and according to their level of awareness. If you do, they will generally be accepting of you. And you go, yeah, that's why people like us and don't like us, because we will jump through their hoops or dance according to their beat. And the trouble with that is it requires us to deny ourselves, to deny our own self-interest, and to deny our own level of awareness. Instead of, you know, thinking in terms of, like, wait, does this resonate with me? Does this feel good? Is this a good idea? Let me do a gut check here. Let me see if this is in harmony with my values and what I believe to be the right way to do things. That's really what we'd want to do. So, what is my recommendation? It's the same one I have for myself. I know that I and everybody else is acting in their own self-interest according to our own levels of awareness. I got that. And I think it's real helpful to know that. And then, as we increase our level of awareness, we can expect better things in our lives. Because we're going to be capable of sowing better seed thoughts, and then, as a result of that, our harvests are going to be better. So the game is really to increase our level of awareness. As we cleanse our consciousness and elevate it, our access to the divine, providing the truth of existence that I was talking about, those nine items, becomes even more obvious to us, because we've eliminated a lot of the erroneous beliefs, a lot of our personal resistance. Let's say we're going to play a competitive sports game against an opponent. You know, this was more of a guy thing, I think, maybe. Although nowadays, as I said earlier, that women are in competitive sports, women's soccer and stuff, and basketball are fantastic sports. So, as a player, we would want to know what our role is. You know, how should I act? What am I supposed to do? What is expected of me? And we also want to know, what is the opponent expected to do? And what do they expect us to do? And what do they expect themselves to do? So all these expectations out on a playing field. And since I do these talks on a Sunday, and this happens to be a time of the year where there's professional football going on, that over the course of the day, there are going to be a lot of collisions of expectations. Coaches and players and defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators and offensive linemen and defensive linemen and quarterbacks and receivers and linebackers and defensive backs, and all of these expectations are colliding on football fields all around the country. You go, wow, wow. So what's this got to do with you and me? I think that if you and I, if we don't formulate our expectations into intentions, we're likely to pursue our roles and our goals with less energy, less commitment. And if the other team has higher expectations of themselves, or they have more intentionality, I think pretty much they're going to get their way. They're going to win. They're going to score more points. They're going to succeed at what they're doing as compared to us. This leads me to the next challenge with expectations. You've heard it referred to in different ways, and so have I. Monday morning quarterbacking. Monday morning quarterbacking is the idea that on Monday, we start talking about what the guy should have done or what we should have done yesterday. And you've also heard this expression, hindsight is 20/20. Yeah, it's really easy after the fact to make judgments about what could have been, should have been, so on. And that's a challenge, because establishing expectations after the event can set us up to feel guilty, regretful, and experience other emotional pain related to shoulda, coulda, woulda. This is one of the real challenges. And I say to people, if they've got somebody who's ill in their family, somebody maybe on their deathbed or nearing the end of their lives, this is the time to say absolutely everything that needs to be said, and to facilitate the other person saying absolutely everything that needs to be said. Because after that death, people go, I should have told them this. I should have said this. I could have said this. And that guilt and regret is like falling into the water, holding on to an anvil. That very, very heavy energy. You don't want to have that. So doing it beforehand is way better than trying to deal with the pain of it after the fact. So this idea of going in, and we've all done this, going into a situation ill-prepared, and after the fact beating ourselves up, what was wrong with me? I should have done this. I could have done that. Why did I not study for that test? Why didn't I rehearse that? Why didn't I double-check my facts and figures? But that just results in pains unless we take that opportunity to learn future, to expect ourselves to be better prepared for future events. Okay, that did not feel good. So if I am ill-prepared for a future event of a similar nature, I pretty much can expect to feel bad. I choose not to. I'm going to prepare. I'm going to study. I'm going to get my ducks in order. That's really what we could do. So if we could create a set of expectations that would be much more likely to result in health, happiness, and success, what would they include? What expectations should we carry around with us? Kind of like a quarterback with plays written on his arm, on a tape to his arm. What would we want to have? Besides the thing that I say a lot of times, people, including us, will act in their own self-interest based upon our levels of awareness. I want to add a few more things. We can expect to grow in understanding and awareness. And if we understand that this is natural and absolutely essential to us, then it's an admission that we don't know everything, that we're not perfect, that there's more to learn, there's more to experience, more skill to be developed, and we can cut ourselves a slack. And by engaging with matter, energy, space, and time, we're trying to learn how to better manage them. What rules would make me more effective, and what rules would make me less effective, and how do I do this, and how do I do that? We can expect when we have that orientation, that we're going to become more effective in life if we set our expectation to become more effective at life. As compared to, I tried it, I failed, I quit. It's like, whoa, dude, or dudette. That's not how it works. You engage with something, and based upon that, you either repeat it because you discovered the rule of success with regard to interacting with that matter, energy, space, or time, or you discovered a way that wasn't very effective. And so now you've discovered one way, and that's pretty much aligned with what Thomas Edison is alleged to have said. You know, I've discovered over 9,000 ways how not to make a light bulb. Because if he had failed 9,000 times and it hurt each time, he would have been beating himself up. That's not how he interpreted the inventive process, this expansion of awareness, this discovery that he was going to ultimately make. He kept discovering. He discovered something that didn't work, which helped him narrow things down. And he kept discovering what didn't work, and ultimately it helped him discover what did work with regard to the light bulb. The second thing that we can expect to give and receive nutrition and nourishment, caring and nurturing. But as we reach a certain age, we can expect a responsibility of that nutrition and nourishment, that caring and nurturing, is going to fall on our shoulders. We got to be the deliverers of it. We are the ones that have to open up to it. We're the ones. We can't continue to hit ourselves with a stick thinking that this is going to motivate us to grow and to be happy and be more open, because that self-abuse, one way or another, with what we say to ourselves, how we treat ourselves, causes us to become more difficult, heavier, more resistance to change, because we're so busy protecting ourselves from ourselves. If we can expect ourselves to be the main nurturer and carer for us in our lives, we're going to be so much better off. And we can expect to reap what we sow. That means the kinder and more loving we are to ourselves and others, the more we will receive experiences of kindness and love in our lives. We can expect that. We can expect to heal. Healing is designed to be natural. And if we allow healing to occur, it will likely occur. If we interfere with healing, and how do we do that? We do it by holding on to fear and doubt. And by holding on to fear and doubt, we make no space for healing to penetrate us. We delay the healing that is rightfully ours. And if we believe that healing is not rightfully ours, that's an erroneous belief that somebody delivered to us, or we misinterpreted or misconcluded, and it's time to let that go. We could grow in our awareness that that is a lie, and we'll be willing to let it get recycled. We can put it on the ground and let it go back into the earth, and we choose to accept healing as rightfully ours. 4, we can expect to be protected. This expectation makes divinely designed protection surround us. Now all of a sudden this field of force around us is one that protects us. If you think, I got fear and doubt, now what we've done is we've reversed this protective field of force, and now our protection and our safety are reduced. We can correct that, but it's up to us to grow. And again, knowing, if you look back over your lives, I'm sure you can find examples, most people can, of some sort of protection, or perhaps of not being protected because we didn't set this in place. Abraham of Abraham Hicks talks about segment intending. Segment intending is this idea that before you do the next series of actions related to a topic in your life called a segment, you want to intend for it to be a certain way. You want to set your expectations. So getting out of bed in the morning is a segment. Driving to work is a segment. Going out to lunch is a segment. You know, driving home is a segment. Working during the day is a segment. And by setting an intention for those, that is, establishing or formulating an expectation, makes it so much easier for that to be attracted to us. We can expect our needs to be fulfilled. Again, if we can open to that, if we can heal our fears and our doubts based upon our previous experiences or stuff we've been told, we're going to be so much better able to have that come into our experience. We'll notice it. We can expect to work. What's the purpose of work? What do we do at work? I think what it is we're directionalizing our energies. Let's say the divine is working for us, in us, and through us. So when we take this energy in, we take in this life force, we're going to use some of it to build muscles and tissues and bones and so on. But we're also going to use some of it to move our bodies around from point A to point B as we're walking, jogging, riding a bike, or sitting in a car, driving there. But we also have an opportunity to express it with a value add. That is, how we can take our energy and use it, deliver it, express it for the betterment of other people. That's what we want to do. We can expect that our work gives us this opportunity for this expression of this value-added energy and get good feelings from it, because that's where effectiveness comes from. Ooh, I closed a desirable result. Man, that felt good. I'm going to do it again. Ooh, I closed a desirable result. I'm going to do that again. And on and on and on. And that's how we create more harmony. We can expect to survive. In fact, we can expect to survive far longer than our physical vehicles. Nobody is surprised when they cut their fingernails or get a haircut or shave. It's like, oh, I lost part of me. Not to worry. We recognize we're more than our bodies. So our energies, the ones that we express, ripple outward. They ripple outward, and they go on and on and on. Our inputs to other people, whether we cause children to be conceived or whether we deliver love to people, the effects of that delivery of energy persists. We can expect that there are rhythms in life. Some we know and use. We know, I saw something on my iPhone that said yesterday there was 10.31 hours of daylight. Guess what? Until the 21st of December, the days are going to be getting shorter. That rhythm that says the 21st is the shortest day of the year, and then from the 22nd on, I understand the days are going to start getting longer. Oh, I didn't make that rule. That rule, that rhythm, that establishment, that ebb and flow, kind of like seasonality, high tide, low tide, night and day, all of these things you and I use. We understand that. If you're up north, you know, hey, it's December. I'm not going out swimming. However, there are some rhythms that we don't understand, and we've got to learn those, and the way we learn them is through experience. And one of the conditions everybody experiences, some more than others, because they are resistant to becoming aware of the rhythm, is things do not always unfold in the time that we want. Some things we want sooner. I want it now. I want it now. I want it now. Ever hear of the word impatience? And some we don't want them to arrive. I want it later. I want it later. I don't want it to arrive so soon. Kids do this with, I can't wait for school to be out so summer can begin. I don't want summer to end. I want it to continue. I want it to continue. We're not much different, even after we're past that stage of our education. But if we stop expecting ourselves to always control the when things happen, we will become a lot happier and a lot more peaceful. And 9, we can expect to be supported in all these ways and more by the intelligence that has created the universes. And it is awareness of that reality is what puts us in a position to have better expectations, to align with the natural energies, to allow it into our experiences, to have it work wonders in our bodies, in our affairs, and for us to be an instrument of its delivery. we can expect all of that. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.